All right. It really helps you if you grow a circle, because it's a cycle, okay? This whole thing is a cycle, and it's not a line. In the Bible, in Hebrew thought, things work in cycles, and every time around the cycle, you see something different. You mean you might read the Bible all the way through, but are you done? No, you go back and start reading it again, because every time through it, you pick up something you never saw before, okay? In a growing season, as a farmer, same thing. It's not a straight line. You don't start and then you're done. It starts going around again. And you learn things you never learned before, and you see things you never saw before. Okay? So draw your circle and divide it up into, now this works different in the islands when you don't have a cold season, but you guys can do the same thing, because the rains start and then the rains stop. And then the rains start and then the rains stop. Okay, so you can do the kind of same thing, just adopt it to your rainy season and your dry season rather than your cool season and a warm season, okay? And you'll have to do your own experience, but that'll get you started. In my neck of the woods, I have a short cool season, I have a long warm season, and I have another somewhat short cool season. It's a little longer than the spring. Spring's really short. So what do? I have to grow short maturing cool season spring crops. I can't grow a 70 or 80 day crop in the spring. I'll never get it to market, right? So anyways, you want to have a last frost date. That's number one. That's if you're not in the islands, you have to have a last frost date, or have when the rains start. And then you go down and you put your first frost in the fall. Okay? And then where do you get this information? A great place for your area is your county extension agent if you live in the States. If you don't, ask an old-time farmer in the island somewhere, okay? They'll know. County extension agent. They know that kind of stuff. I don't trust them with fertilizing stuff, but I do trust them with knowing the frost dates. And the other thing is, I always use the 30% date. You know, usually you get the 50-50 date. You have a 50% chance of this being the last frost date, and you have a 50% chance of it happening before this, and a 50% chance of it happening after this, okay? But usually I try to go with the 70%. I want a little bit more in my favor, because if you get a frost, you ruin some things, right? So I don't like to take too much of a gamble there. I'll wait a week longer than some guys do, you know, just because I don't want to take a gamble. But I use April 7th where I'm at, because I can look out on a 7-day forecast and see if any frost is predicted. And then if none is predicted, I plan April 7th. You know, that's my frost date.
What is the H and HH and the T?
Good question, I'm sorry. That means hardy plants and half hardy. Cool season plants are rated by, can they withstand certain temperatures really cold, or can they stand a light frost? Can they stand a heavy, moderate to heavy frost one or two times, or can they only withstand a light frost and they get killed at heavy frost? So you have two categories of cool season crops, hardy and half hardy. Ones can stand a heavy frost, some can only stand a light frost. They can't stand the heavy frost. Good question. Happens over here, the cool season crop on this end. The T stands for tender, and the VT stands for very tender. Okay? Tender crops you can plant at frost date to a couple of weeks after is a good window. Very tender, you want to let it get even warmer. You plant them 4 weeks from your frost date, because they can't handle 40 degree nights. But a tender plant can handle a few 40 degree nights and not get hurt. Okay, so that's how you do it that way. And then once you get your last frost date and your first frost date, you want to get your midpoint. You want to have the same. You want to find out when you've gone up to the top of the top of that circle, and then when you're going down and you're in your countdown stages. Here, you're waiting for this date, and your cool season crops you're planting out here, and then they're hopefully maturing here, and you're starting to harvest in here. Because when it gets hot, these things go downhill quick. Okay, so you start planting these here, and then you start harvesting them down out in here, and then you till them. Well, we'll get into all that, but that circle really helps you out, and everybody's got it. Okay, the island folks are going to have to adapt this, but you can do a circle too, because it's a cycle down there just like it is here. Start season transplants here, and I also start mowing my spring beds. Okay, Now, I'm going to put a date into every one of these, okay, pretty soon. But, I mean, I'm just telling you what I do, all right? You can see about how far off it is from the last frost date. While it's still cold outside, I'm starting to start seed transplants, right? Peppers take about 8 weeks to get up to size. Tomatoes take about 5 weeks. Some plants only take 4 weeks to grow a transplant in those things. Okay, so you got to start early so you'll have it when you need to put it out there, okay? And all this takes planning. If you wait, and everybody wants to start gardening in the spring. The time to start your garden is the fall before. That's when you should fertilize. That's when you should soil test. Organically, you have to start 6 months before because all that stuff takes time for the biology to break down. If you're going to be a chemical farmer, you can start in the spring because all that stuff is readily available really fast. It's super soluble, right? It kills your microbes, but, you know, you can utilize it right then when you put it on. I'd rather be an organic farmer and start early, okay, in the fall. Then you start your hardy crops in the ground out here, and then you can start your half-hardy crops in the ground a little closer because why? You know, hardy crops can, you know, out here, you might get a hard frost or two, and they can handle it. Your half-hardy crops can't handle it here. They need to wait a little longer when the chances of you getting a hard frost are a little less, okay? Then you have your tender crops right after last frost because they can't handle any kind of freezing weather. They can handle down in the 40s, but you can't get into the mid 30s or they're toast. And then you have to plant later on. You have to plant your very tender crops, and these are going to come due in the summertime, right? But you're out of the freeze zone, okay? And then right here, your spring crops, these hardies and half hardies, are coming to an end. And then your summer harvest starts coming. These crops here start coming online through here, right? These crops are dying off as it gets hot. Then you plant your, once you get these harvested off, until then, you plant your summer cover crop in those cool season beds, right? Because you're going to have a summer cover crop growing all through here to keep that ground cover until you come back in here and you replant those beds with more cool season crops. You get, in my country, or in my area, you get two cool season crops in. And in between, you plant a summer cover crop. Then, okay. Then, as you're going down the downhill of your cycle now, you start seeds for your fall transplanting up here in August. In my area, it's August. In your area, it'll be different. But, you know, you get the point. Okay? Because I got to have those starts ready to plant right about in here. So I have the cool season crops coming online because I got to have them. I want to have them harvestable before this first frost hits because I'm going to lose some things at first frost, even the cool season. Well, the hardy ones can go past this a little bit. But some of your half hardies, you know, they die off when the frost gets too hard right after here. Okay? So this is right here. I'm thinking about soil temperature. I actually go by a date, April 7th. But really, if you really want to do it, you have a thermometer in the ground, and when you get a sustainable 60 degree soil temp, most things are 60 degrees. When you get a sustainable 60 degree soil temp, then you can start putting in these tender and very tender crops. Before that, you might have problems with them. So it's not really about a date. Monitor the soil temperature. Here, you don't have to worry about soil temperature. What you're worried about is this frost date and having enough window to have mature, harvestable crops before you hit it because some things are ruined. Sweet potatoes fold up at the sign of a frost, so you got to get the sweet potatoes out of the ground because they'll actually just get killed. But you know, you'll have sweet potatoes, and they'll just die when you hit a frost. So you're hammering up against a date here. This is more about soil temperature, and this is more about a date. Make your date. And if you get a little leeway, hey, these guys can hang out and go a little longer for you. You know what I mean? Then you start planting your hardy crops in the ground. In the ground, the days of maturity plus 18-day harvest window. So if it says, if my cool season crop says, I'm going to have a plant in 60 days, I say, okay, not only do I need those 60 days, but I need about 18 days to harvest it in before I get to this frost. So I got to add 18 to whatever my maturity date is. So now let's say it's a 60-day crop. Now I got to add 18 days to have a harvest window before I hit this. So now I'm up to 78 days. And then if I have to plant it in a tray, I got to add 4 weeks onto that. So now I got to add another 28 days to that 68 days, and that backs me up into here somewhere. That's all about planning, okay? And you have to do it if you're going to be a successful gardener, because timing is everything. You can't expect a plant to grow when it's not its time to grow. And then you start, your tender and very tender crops are done. You know, your summer crops are done. You're starting to plant your winter cover crop here so you can go all through the winter long, and you're having to understory it with your half-hearted, cool season crops you just planted so you can have a winter cover crop. Your half-hardy crops are done a little after first frost because they can handle a few light frosts. Then you get in a couple of hard frosts, you know, or sustained cold temperatures, and your hardy crops are done, like your broccolis. I mean, the cold takes them out, right? But by this time, you should have a good stand of a winter cover crop, especially in your summer beds where you took them down early, and as an understory in your cool season beds. They should, be coming on. They won't get hammered by the frost or the snow or anything else. So in my area, my spring harvest is like from April 15th to June 15th. I can get spring crops. I can get summer crops from about June 1st to about, the 1st of October. Because the 1st of October, I might still be getting tomatoes or something like that. But because I want to get my cover crop in, I pick the tomatoes green, I sell green tomatoes, I take everything out. I just pick everything. And some people like it green. You know, I don't really like green fruit or unripe fruit, but some people like it green, like fried green tomatoes. And I pick everything, even though it's still producing, because I want to get that cover crop on before it gets cold, so I have a good stand of cover crop. That's crucial. So you say, a lot of people say, oh, I can't get rid of that tomato. I still got tomatoes. Look at all, I'm waiting. A lot of times they don't turn red when it starts getting cold.
That would be me.
You know, they just sit there green forever. So just pick them green. If you like fried green tomatoes, eat them. Sell them to somebody. You can make green chutney, you know, lots of things with green tomatoes. And get rid of it and till that in and plant your cover crop so you get a nice lush stand over winter. Don't be greedy. You had a good summer. Take the plants out and think about your microbes. Okay, then I also do that, after I do the circle thing, then I have, this is my own personal notes, I just sort of put them up there. I have things I do in December, and I don't do dates here, I just say early December I'm going to plant onion transplants. Early to late December I'm going to sharpen my tools. So I don't have to think about things and I don't miss things. You know what I mean? I can consult my list on a monthly basis, and I don't forget what to do stuff. I don't want to be out there in spring going, doggone it, I forgot to sharpen my tools. Now when I should be doing something with my tools, I'm in the tool shed sharpening stuff and wasting time, okay? When that job should have been done a long time ago when I had cold weather and I wasn't growing. And then you see January, you're talking about ordering seeds. In my neck of the woods, it's a little cooler where you are, but in my neck of the woods, you order your seeds in January. And if you don't get them ordered in January, and even you might have to, if you don't get them ordered in January, they run out, and you don't get the pick of the litter. And that happens a lot of times. Everybody thinks, oh, well, it's in a catalog, and they just got bukus of this stuff. No, they don't. Everybody's wanting to grow the same stuff, and they're buying the same stuff all over the country. And this is getting a lot more popular, and they're running out of stuff. Right? I mean, if you're in the seed business, you're in a good time right now because this stuff is really hitting hard. Jared Gettle can tell you that with the Baker Creek heirloom seed. Then March, here are all my dates, and we won't go through all these, take much time, but you get the idea, right?
Yes.
Okay, you can find some of these online, but this is from my own experiences. This is what I have to do. It's kind of like a verbalized section of that circle graph I did, okay?
We're coming up on the next meeting.
Okay. Okay, this is really important. This is my little snapshots of my Excel spreadsheet. I gapped it so I can't fit the whole thing in here. But I got the middle of winter. I got the frost date, the last frost date in spring. I got my midpoint in July. And then I got my November 15th first frost date, right? And what I did is I just numbered those days. You've seen those calendars where you just number the days beside it, from 1 to 365 or 366 in a leap year. And then here, that's now knowing the correlated date, and I can just look that up, I can say, okay, I'm going to plant this April 7th, and it's going to mature in 60 days. When can I expect to harvest this? Well, here I'm having to figure too much. Here I can just say, oh, 60 plus 90 is 157. Go down here to 157, wherever that is, and say, oh, I should be harvesting on whenever that is. Okay? See how quick that is? Then here I have the number of grades of the growing season to my and the dormant number of days of growing season and dormant season. So what I did here is April 7th is the first day of my growing season. So that's number one. And then here, November 15th, the last day of my, this is where my first frost is, the last day of my growing season. That's number 223. It, counting here is one, that's 223, right? Not counting January is one, right? You understand that? You see my logic here? So I know my growing season is 223 days long. Then the next day is one, and I go through the winter, and I know my winter until April 6th is 142. That's great. That really helps with planning. And then I'd have different variations where I start April 6th. What did I do here? I think I counted down. You know, instead of counting up, I counted down. Because sometimes you, when you're, you know, at that fall date, that first frost date in the fall, you're not worried about counting up. You're counting down. So sometimes it's a little easier to count down to the frost and count up from the spring. You know what I'm saying? So that's good. And then I have a couple of other ways. And here, see? Last frost, or last freeze, midsummer, first freeze, and then I got these two dates as kind of midwinter. But anyways, you can do that on Excel spread, and you can refer to it, and you don't have to sit there and scratch your head every time you think about it. And pretty soon, once you look at it enough, you kind of, it starts to get ingrained, okay? We saw this earlier, the my little space chart, my plant spacing, right? The thing here is my space between plants. Or it's always called, you can say, I want to plant something 10 inches apart, right? Well, how many feet apart is that? 10 inches apart is 0.833 feet apart, right? Well, how many plants per foot is that? And that's what you're really after, is that 1.2 plants per foot. That's what 10 inches apart is, okay? So here I don't have to think about it. What does the purple and blue mean? Just me being my organizational self. This means I usually think about this in inches. And when I go here, I usually think that is, I want to plant those 1 foot apart. I don't think I want to plant them 12 inches apart. I think 1 foot, right? Or I want to plant a foot and a half apart. Here, I want to think in inches. Here, I want to think in feet. And this is what I'm after. How many plants per foot, okay? So here are my two ways I think in my head, and this is what I'm after. Okay, why is that important? Because let's say I want to plant 25 feet of basil. All right, and I want, and I have a 25-foot bed. I have a 4-foot wide bed, and I want to plant 25-foot of basil. Well, I know from experience, I like to put about 3 rows of basil in a 4-foot wide bed. I've tried it tighter. I've tried it more open. 3 foot gives me a good canopy, covers it for the weeds. I get a good big plant. So I like 3 rows of basil. That's how I space them, and I put one in the middle. And I come in here and I see, well, how many? You know, I went, go back to my row thing and say, I want to plant 3 rows. What do I do? You remember this one? 3 rows. Okay, I want to do them, really it should be 8 inches. I'm going to do them 15 inches and have a 9-inch curb on that one. All right, so that's how I space them. 3 rows of basil, and then, so I know I have 25-foot bed, and I want to have 3 rows, and I'm going to plant them 10 inches between plants, and I know 10 inches between plants is 1.2 plants per foot. When I know that, I have 25 feet of bed, times 3 rows gives me 70. I got 25 bed feet, but because I'm planting 3 rows, that means I have 75 row feet. Is that, I mean, everybody knows this stuff, or are you learning something, or am I just, is it just so obvious that?
No, it's good.
It's part of planning. You know, I don't want to, if it's too, I mean, it's simple, but if you're not used to it, it could be something you need, you know. So I got 1-2 plants per, I got, here I got 1-2 plants per foot going in 75 foot a row. You do the math, da 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 da. That means for 25 bed feet, I need 90 basil plants.
Does that mean that when you're buying, you know exactly how many to buy?
You know, if you're buying little starts, you know exactly how many to buy. If you're starting from those, you start figuring out how many cells you need to fill with seeds. And then if you're doing 2 cells per seed, you know how many seeds you need to buy. Because you get the seed catalog, but a lot of people just say, well, I think that'll be enough, and they don't plan. And then they run out, or they have way too many, and they've wasted their money. Yeah, well, when you're doing it for a living, you don't want to, you want to have enough, because if you lose money if you don't have enough, because you don't have it to sell and people want it and you're like, wow, I wish I had it. And you're not going to make some more money. And if you have too much, you've wasted your money on seed because it doesn't last forever.
And labor and water.
So that's why planting's important. And that we just went through that. Now my big question is, I want to plant 25 foot of bed based on three rows per bed at 10 inches between plants. Okay, that's my spacing. So I know how much I'm going to space it with a 6-inch curb, but it's really a 9-inch curb I use. All right. And anyway, now my big thing is, am I going to transplant these things, this basil, or am I going to direct seed basil? Well, because it's not a bean or a fast-growing crop, here's the trays. I like to grow my basil, and there's my mentor, Daniel, a really good farmer, and I want to grow my basil in these trays, and I need 90 plants per bed. So now I know, I pick up one of these trays, and because it's basil and I plant them a foot apart, I usually use these 72s and not the 162s. But you could use the 162s and pot them up. The reason you'd use the bigger ones is because if you plant a foot apart or more, you can plant them in these and get them a little bigger. If you plant them a foot or less, you can plant them in these and you can put them in a little smaller, or you can pot them up. If you have things that don't germinate very well, you don't want to waste a big old tray on things that don't germinate very well. So things that don't germinate, like peppers, I'd like to grow them in here because I can't get peppers to germinate very well. I grow them in here. That way I can pot them up. The ones that do make it and germinate, I can pot them up into something bigger, you know, a bigger thing. And so these are smaller things are for goods that are tight spacing. You don't waste much greenhouse space. And for things that don't germinate well, you don't waste a lot of effort with dead cells. Okay, that's the difference in sizes. So I am going to transplant this basil. So now I got to figure out, I'm going to use 72 cells. So it really doesn't matter how many basil plants I need. I only got 72 here. So if I'm going to have 90 basil plants, I'm going to have to do two of these trays, because that's going to be 72 plus 72 is 144, right? So, okay, I'm going to have some extra plants, but that's okay, because I can pot them up in little pots and sell them for $2 a piece. And people buy them all day long. And I made a lot of money selling my extras. And people say, I said, don't worry, I grow these same ones. I said, you can buy it from me and grow your own, or you can wait later and I'll have it here and you can buy the finished product. Either way. And they love it. They just love it. And and that's a pretty good markup, because each cell probably cost me only, I don't know, you factor in labor. I don't know, but it's a good profit margin on them. $2 a plant. I mean, you might spend 50 cents on it total. So $1.50 is a 3-time markup. And I give people a break if they buy more, and I come down in that price. Because you want to move them. You don't want to hang on to them. And so if the people buy more, I come down in the price, you know. But when you're doing these, you've got to factor in a fudge factor, because you're not going to germinate every single cell. You're going to have some dead cells. So I usually use, I'm pretty conservative, I use 30%. Some guys play the edge and use 15%. So 90 plants times my fudge factor of 117. Well, I'm getting closer to two cells now all the time. I'm down up to 117 plants I need with a fudge factor. See the following screen? Okay. I knew I'd get confused with this. I got to get myself directions going through here. But then I got this out of Seeds of Change seed catalog. I don't think I had them here. I don't really like using them for seed, but they have some great charts in the Seeds of Change catalog. Okay. A lot of these seed catalogs, they're full of great information, because they want you to be successful. It's just Seeds of Change has always been, like I said, they don't really come through for me sometimes. You know, they have some great looking stuff in the catalog, and they print out a nice catalog, but they need to pick up their quality control issues, okay? But I love the information they have in here. I use it all the time. So this is basil. I come in here. This is sort of a blow-up of this chart. Here's sweet basil here. I know it tells me for 100 feet, if I'm going to direct seed, I need 350 seeds per 100 feet, and I'm going to put them in a seeder and do them out. I hope that works out. I hope what they told me is the truth. But I'm not direct seeding, so that really doesn't concern me on this one. What I am doing is I'm trying to get my planting distances. I have found through experience, and this one is for basils, it gives you between rows, they say 36 inches. Well, what am I doing? I'm doing 15 inches, so I'm ignoring them on that, because my experience tells me I can plant them 15 inches and get a good canopy. Don't always go by this. It's a good guide, but you know, you're not locked into these, okay? apart a row after thinning. Oh, that's before thinning. After thinning, 12 inches. Okay, that's more my speed, 12 inches apart. Sometimes 18, they say. Okay, I get it now. Planting depth. So this is pre-thinning. This is post-thinning, what they should be apart. And this is planting depth. Planting depth, 6 to 9 inches. That's not right. Days to germination, 7 to 12. So when they're in the, when you got the seeds planted, you're watering, and you get into day 14 or day 20, and you still don't see any emergence, maybe they're not going to emerge. Maybe it's time to go to plan B and sow some more seeds or buy some transplants from the store. Because after 21 days, if I don't see some life coming out of that dirt, either I've done something wrong or they sold me some bum seed. Okay? And I got to make, if I'm planning on it, then what am I going to put in that bed? Is it going to sit there all summer with nothing in it? I don't want that. That's, I'm losing money. Okay? So that's important. I got to go back to, I don't know what the planting depth, I know I don't sow it that deep. Planting depth, 6 to 9 inches. Oh, that's asparagus. Here, quarter inch. I was thinking it was the second. It's the third one down. This gets put up here. Okay. Okay, anyways, so where did I get the 350 seeds from? That's direct seeding, right? If I direct seeded, I need 315 seeds for 90 feet, right? For 100 feet. Because what did I have? 150 feet or something, like three rows, 25 feet, 75 feet, right? Blah, 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 350 seeds, 90-foot row, 3.5 seeds per row, per row foot. So every foot, I get 3.5 seeds when I'm planting, you know, with the direct seeding. But I'm not direct seeding these. I don't know why I got this on here. And anyways, it works out. What I'm trying to get is how many inches between seeds before thinning? 3.4 inches. Okay? But I'm not direct seeding that. Okay. Okay, I see what I did. Now I am pretending like I am direct seeding instead of transplanting, because basil you can go either way with, you know, kind of thing. So if I was direct seeding it, I know if I'm transplanting it, I'm going to need two transplant trays. I work in my fudge factor, and I need 117 cells now for a fudge with a fudge factor of 30%. Then I need to fill 117 trays with at least two seeds. If it's a 90% germination rate, I'll do two seeds. If it's less than 90% germination rate, I'll do three seeds. And I'll have to thin if all of them come up, because you only want one seed per cell. And you can thin them with scissors if you want to. I like doing it that way too. So I need 117 and times two for two cells each. Let's say I do have a 90% germination rate. So 117 times two is 234. So direct seeding, I need 234 seeds. I mean, transplanting, I need 234 seeds. Here, I figured out, what did I figure out I needed? 315 seeds, right? So how do I get a seed every 3.4 inches? Remember, I got that back here, 3.4 inches. How do I get a seed every 3.4 inches? Well, I got my direct, I got my earthway seeder that gives me my direct seed. I got to pick the right seed plate to use. Then when I get the right seed plate, what happens is I want to plant every 10 inches for 90 plants in a 75-foot bed. A calculation is to buy 315 seeds. Or back here, what did we get? One of the things we got off this was how many seeds per ounce? I don't see it. Well, it's in that chart. You get how many seeds per ounce? And then I need, figuring that out, 315 seeds should weigh 1/63 of an ounce. Well, they don't sell it in 1/63 of an ounce. Okay? And I need 1/63 of an ounce to drop a seed every 3.4 inches. My problem is my order choices in the catalog are one packet for 100 seeds. Well, that's not enough. I need 315 at 250. Or I can get 1 ounce, which according to the number of seeds per ounce, and every seed's different, I get 20,000 seeds for 1 ounce, and it's $5. Look at that. I mean, you go from, you only pay double, and you're getting like, what is that, 200 times more seeds? That's the way it works. But I don't really need 20,000 seeds. So what do I do with that? Well, sometimes I say, hey, don't order any basil, I'll sell you mine. You know, and I could, you can make a little money that way. Or what I'll do is I'll just grow a lot of basil and sell the plant. Because basil seed probably only keeps three, you know, every seed keeps anywhere from 1 to 5 years. You know, so it probably falls in the 3-year range, you know. And I can use it next year. I probably use it a year after that. But your germination rates are going to go down every year. And I don't really like that. So what I do is I have these. Now I have to get my seed plates. And I want it every 3.4 inches. But I don't have a seed plate that has 3.4 inches. So I have to choose, I guess the 3 inches would be the closest one. So I choose a 3-inch seed plate. But guess what happens again? If I put, I can put 20,000 seed, but if I had something less, I got to make sure I fill that hopper up about halfway to get the thing to work. So, you know, you got to go through all these gyrations. And finally, my conclusion is I buy 4 ounces, use 1-inch plate. I use the 1-inch plate because I'm super conservative and I want to make sure the stuff comes up instead of 3 inches. And I do more seeds. And in 1 inch per row and 75 feet, I need 900 seeds. But even with sowing 900 seeds, I still have 71,000 seeds because I did the 4 ounces, 71,000 seeds left over. I guess I could do the 1 ounce, the 20,000 seeds. But like I said, I'm super conservative and I want to plant more seeds. I want to do 1 inch spacing. I don't know what. Yeah, I don't know why I did, you know, sometimes I wonder, how did I get that?
That's a good bargain, you're just gonna...
Yeah. Yeah, well, sometimes that's it. You think, golly, I'm only paying a little bit more and getting so many more seeds. But like I said, you got to do something with them. Anyways, you get the idea. I might have messed that up a little bit. Okay, that's it then. Blah, 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 blah.
We're just calling you when we get stuck.
Yeah, just call me. This is stuff on the seed packet. Look at Johnny's. I love this 80% germination rate. Most seed companies don't do that. You should fuss at them and tell them they need to start doing that. And all the information is back here. But like I said, spacing is on you. I govern my spacing by the size of my hose and by experience because I want a canopy. Grow at least 10 feet of bed of one thing. A lot of people want to do the biointensive thing where they hodgepodge it and try to grow a lot of this stuff. Well, they grow at different rates and one thing is faster than the other and it shades out the other. Grow 10 feet of one thing, at least 10 feet of one thing. And then stop if you want to and grow 10 feet of another. But in one bed, you don't want to have a summer crop and a cool season crop. If you're going to do that, do different cool season crops in one bed so they all come out together and you're not having to stop your tiller 10 feet in and turn around. You know what I mean? Do one bed of cool season and then do 10 foot of one cool season, then 10 foot of another cool season, then 10 foot of another cool season. Okay? Consult your records to make your plan. Consult crop rotations to avoid too much subdivision of beds. Buy your seeds early and have them on hand. Don't wait till you're ready to plant because it takes sometimes 4 weeks to get them. And make your deadlines. And this is my crop rotation here. Part of planting is rotation. I've got my pole beans were my winter warm season crop, my cool season fall crop because these finish early. I was able to get turnip greens in here. And then my cover crop was vetch and barley. These were a warm season, sweet peppers were my warm season crop. Because they go all the way to when I plant my winter cover, I can't get a fall crop in behind them. But cucumbers finish early. I can get a fall crop then, and then I have a winter cover. Here's my warm season of okra. Okra, I do a whole bed of okra. I don't divide it up. And then I have my winter cover crop is vetch and barley. And this is my tomatoes. I do a whole bed full of tomatoes. And then every year, I just rotate everything around. And I like this rotation. I jostled it around the first couple of years and kind of got what I liked. It took me a while to work it out. But then, you know, once I get it where I like, I just rotate it around and everything grows in a different bed. Why? That helps disease pressure. It helps insect pressure. It helps the nutrient load being sucked out of the soil. And this is my spreadsheet with all my planting guides. I can just chug in numbers and calculate when these dates should be. These are estimated dates, and these are estimated dates, and I plug those in, and they're, I forget what it is, but The color means I have to plug in a number. I think if it's white, I have to plug in a number. And then if it's colored here, I have to, it's a calculated number. It's got a formula in there. I didn't have to put that in. It figured it out, right, just by putting it in. And then on the green ones, I record the actual, because it never really happens like you think it is sometimes. But then every time you do this, every season you do this, you get a better and better estimate of when things happen. And that all helps in your planning. Three guys, you need crop, flower crops, food crops, and plant sales. Yeah, that's one of your records. Daily operation log. I do that on a computer too. And like I told you, activity, you know, date, day of the week it is, and then activity word, and then remarks, what I did in that activity. Any little remarks on there. And I really love that daily operation logs. I record the max bin temperatures that night, especially in the spring when that really kind of matters, you know, and when it gets really hot in the summer. You know, things get affected by cool nights and things get affected by hot days. You can do the heat degree days. We won't get into that. I don't really do barometric pressure, but cloud cover I like to do because that affects my crops, all my activities. Number of visitors is a nice thing to know. Refractometer readings when I do them, conductivity readings when I do them. And then I have a harvest log too. And I don't weigh them, but I kind of guess the amounts, you know, because I don't have a scale yet. Then I do a map log, and I actually draw a map. And things on the map I put on date. On that log, I like to do dates things emerge, and I can go out in the field and say, well, that's emerging, and I can write that on my map log. And I just, it's basically just drawing a big map of my garden and then writing on it. And then when it gets there, there's my map log. I do it on the computer too. I just made boxes that I can fill in on a database thing, and I can just, you know, do it by the month. I like to keep track of the moons, and I write my remarks in here. There's my plot A, plot B, plot C, plot D, and all the things I did during that month. And then I have another one for the next month, and another one for the next month. And that's it.
This media was produced by Audioverse for the NAD Health Summit. If you would like to learn more about the NAD Health Summit, please visit www.nadhealthsummit.com. Or if you would like to listen to more free online sermons, please visit www.audioverse.org.